Hello and welcome to this edition of The International Communicator. My name is Jacques Strauss. I'm a freelance producer and one of the hosts of the podcast for the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists in the UK. If you have an interest in SLT, and I assume you do because you're here, I would encourage you to give our podcast a go as well. Search for RCSLT on Apple Podcasts or your preferred provider. We are delighted to be part of this exciting initiative, and today I'm very pleased to introduce David Rochus, a speech and language therapist who works in the west of Kenya. I started by asking David to introduce himself.
All right, thank you, Jack. I'm David Rochus. I'm from Uganda, and I trained from Makerere University, that's in Kampala, for a bachelor's in speech and language therapy. I finished my program in 2010, and I went on to a self-imposed internship for a whole year. So part of that time, I did 5 months in the hospital that I trained in Kampala, and then the rest of the time, I did it in Kenya, rural Kenya, because my supervisor felt that I needed to have a close to the actual setting that I'll actually be working with, where most of the clients are from. That's in the remote areas, not in the urban, in the city centers.
David actually first trained as a paramedic and worked as a paramedic for a number of years. But when he saw his cousin being treated for a stammer, he became fascinated by the field and retrained. I asked him what he considered the biggest challenge to be in changing careers.
Right. That's an interesting question, because from my point of view, those are two different, very distinct professions. Paramedics is more into the direct medical work, where you have to actually work with blood, actually work with diseased bodies, which is different to with the SLT. And it was a psychological and emotional shift of mindset from medical to rehab medical. And that was the greatest challenge that I faced when I started my program.
If you talk to the average person, certainly here in the UK, and you said to them, oh, what do speech and language therapists do? They'd say to you, stammering. But it's actually it's not a huge part of the work.
Definitely. It's just a very small, small part of what we do as speech and language therapists, as I got to know later into the training.
You work for a charity called Yellow House Outreach. Can you tell me what it is Yellow House Outreach does?
All right. Yellow House was started to provide affordable speech and language therapy in Western Kenya, of course. And most of the services were meant to be provided through government facilities, that is government hospitals, that public hospitals, and government funded schools. And all our services initially were meant to be free, because we're doing lots of fundraising, mostly in high income countries, and purely all the money would go into paying our wages, covering our home visits, transportation, and resources. And initially, would also provide resources to families, all adapt resources for them. It started off as a charity. Right now, it's a non-profit company that has to, because we have to look at raising funds locally. As you know, globally, funds are rare. Getting funding is becoming very, very, very hard. So we had to look for ways of raising funds locally. That's why we partnered with some private hospitals, where which money is put into funding our day-to-day costs when we work with public hospitals where the services are totally free.
I wonder if you could tell the listeners a little bit more about your role.
I head clinical work in Yellow House, but as well, I manage the day-to-day programs of Yellow House. We have a small team. Currently, we are two speech therapists, and we have a parent liaison officer who helps us connect with parents or re-explain our management strategies or management programs to parents in a language that they understand. So I manage all that we do. I manage the home visits that we do. I manage the outreach work that we do. I manage research. When we have research currently, we're looking for funding to do research in developing language norms. So I manage all that, plus seeing clients or patients in both schools and hospitals, outpatient and inpatient.
I want to come back to this question of research that's being undertaken, because I think it's a really interesting question. But I think it would be helpful for our listeners just to understand a little bit. So you are a charity that is providing speech and language services to people in the west of Kenya. Could you just tell us a little bit more about the existing Kenyan health system and what provision of SLT services is there from government?
Right now, it's a work in progress for the government. Right now, the government hasn't officially recognized the profession, meaning that it's not in the government civil service system yet, but steps are being undertaken, whereby you find like we have a recently established hospital in Nairobi, Kenyatta University Teaching and Referral Research Hospital, which has advertised and is almost taking on speech therapists. And we have a few other private hospitals, but in public sector, the public service hasn't fully taken on speech and language therapy as a service they directly fund.
Okay, that's really interesting. So it's in Kenya, it's very much a new and emerging field. There isn't public provision of speech and language therapists. And so the only way you can see an SLT would be to go private or through the charitable route. So is that right?
Definitely, yes. That's true.
And could you tell us how many speech and language therapists there are in Kenya at the moment?
Okay. Currently, our Association of Speech and Language Therapists has about 23 registered speech and language therapists. And about four of those of the 23 are newly qualified from the program, training program that recently was started. So in total, 23 practicing SLTs.
So the UK's population is about 67 million, and we have just over 20,000 practicing SLTs. And Kenya's population is just under 54 million. In the UK, we have long waiting lists and real pressure on the services, so truly extraordinary demands on David and his fellow clinicians. Given that the profession is often not well understood within the UK, I asked David for his thoughts on how well SLT is understood in Kenya.
It's very recent that we've even reached that number of 23 speech therapists, and hospitals, schools, they actually, most of the professionals don't know what we actually do. Most of the time when they hear a speech therapist, they always think we teach sign language. And but so they don't have this whole scope of what we actually can do or can be involved in.
You know, given that there's only 23 of you, yes, you don't really have an opportunity to specialize. Do you have to look at eating, drinking, swallowing, communication, the works?
You know, I always think specializing here in this setting is a luxury, because on a normal day you'd never know who walk through the door of your clinic, and usually everyone walks in and you can't turn them away because there's no other person that they'll go to. And usually, if there's any other person that they could go to, like we are two, it'll be miles and miles away, or there'll be long waiting lists. So yeah, you have to do everything, or you have to practically learn to do everything.
I wonder if you could tell me what are general attitudes in Kenya like towards let's say communication difficulties and stuff.
Most people don't really prioritize communication difficulties as something that needs to be given due attention, because it's not like a disease like you'll see malaria that will cause. Most of the disorders in communication are not like a disease that would cause cause ache, and most of them are not fatal. So most people would think. I remember when we were training, most people think that working on communication is something you should do when you have lots of money and lots of free time. So it's a laid back attitude towards communication disability.
Right. How interesting. And yet, but actually, we could argue that the reverse is true. That if we have people with communication difficulties, and we intervene early enough, that means they're not only going to live happier lives, but presumably more economically successful lives.
Just to add on to that, actually, even though that's the attitude, but usually when we actually start seeing, when someone walks into the door with a communication difficulty, you notice that the people that are suffering from the condition, the disability, actually they have a huge load on their chest, and usually it turns out that they are struggling more than the attitude, the population, the view the population puts on communication disability. They usually harbor a lot of emotions, a lot of worries, anxiety due to their inability to communicate.
You said that part of your remit is research. What interests me is what we know about the pathologies in Africa. On the one hand, we know that the population of Kenya is a lot younger than, say, the population of the United Kingdom. So that might mean we're seeing less kind of EDS stuff on the one hand. Mm-hmm. But then there are also things, there's I guess, cultural considerations, but also African languages have very distinct speech sounds, often speech sounds that are not found in other Western languages. What do you know about SLT pathologies that we think may be specific to parts of Africa? And I don't want to say sub-Saharan Africa, because that's too big.
That's interesting, because there is very little known. Let me say, not enough is known about speech therapy and related pathologies and related norms that would support speech therapy management. For example, let me just paint a picture for you. In Kenya alone, there are over 40 tribes, each with a distinct language. And mind you, some of these languages have different intricacies in their formulation, in the syntax of their sentences. And most of the population, they're not just monolingual or bilingual; they're multilingual. We have people who speak more than three languages: their tribal language, Kiswahili, English. And everyone who walks into our clinic, adult or child, usually they are fluent with more than one language, but they are more comfortable in one and on the other. There's a misconception that because Kiswahili is the national language, everyone is fluent in it. Actually, working in the rural communities, that's not true. You end up having to work or get someone to translate into local language. So, and there's no research, that kind of research that covers every language or gives a foundation on all these languages.
Right. So are you saying to me that very often when you're doing clinical work, you're having to use a translator as well?
Yes. Very often we find ourselves using a translator. But most of the time, translators come handy when we do community outreaches or we run our rural clinics. Urban centers, we mostly use Kiswahili and English.
I'm guessing it's different. Let's say a British speech and language therapist were to go out and use a translator, you know, where you work. Even though you may not speak one of the particular languages, the fact that you know some and that you speak Swahili is probably more helpful than only being able to speak, say, English.
Yes, that's definitely true. Because if you notice, like we get, I mean, you're giving an example of a British therapist, and there's a funny example that happened with one of our with one of SLTs here. She was from Britain, and she was working with a family that was fluent in English. But midway in a session, they turned to me. That time I was during my internship. They turned to me and asked me, "Can you translate what she's saying?" And this is English. They wanted me to translate from her English to English. So the session ended up being in English, but let me say different accents of the English.
Right, that is fast. I mean, these are things I hadn't thought about, but of course it makes perfect sense. I grew up in South Africa, and lots of people there, you're right, speak not just three, some people speak five, six, seven languages. And I wonder, it's going to be really interesting when you look at the cognitive development of children, where they're speaking that number of languages has an impact on speech development and stuff like that.
I think you're right. That's curious, because every time when we're having our supervision meetings, we're just talking about our clients. Usually that's the question that we ask ourselves. We're like, how do these children, how are these people able to learn all these different languages and speak them fluently? It's fascinating. But you talked about research. This region is a very fertile region for research, and it doesn't have to be new research. It could be research replicated from another area, all population to here. But yes, there is a lot of opportunities for research here in the area of speech and language therapy.
I guess the question to you is then, what research are you undertaking, given that there are extraordinary clinical needs, given that there are so few of you?
Thank you. That's interesting, because sometimes even our day-to-day work, sometimes it feels like research. But formally, when the process of getting funding for we call it a norms project, we've done more than two pilots already to test our tools. And this pilot project, norms project, is going to be looking into developmental norms of children between one year to 3 years. And it's basically going to look at children in Western Kenya. We're picking two tribal languages, so language development in two tribal languages.
David and I spoke about collaborations between Yellow House and other institutions, including Manchester Metropolitan University and the University of Toronto, as well as placement opportunities for students from Toronto and Kenya. These were interrupted during the pandemic, but they hope to start them again soon. One of the challenges that David spoke about is getting local placements. The students are based in Nairobi, and so it's simply too expensive to pay for accommodation in West Kenya for the duration of the placement. Of course, these challenges are not unique to Kenya, and one just needs to consider the resource, the logistics across the tertiary sector and the health sector and in government in establishing a new clinical service. But progress is being made. There are programs in East Africa, in Uganda and Kenya, but also in West Africa in countries like Ghana. We then moved on to talk about the purpose of this program, which is establishing communication as a human right. So I asked practically, what can actually be done to promote this idea?
I think one of the things that can be done for people like this project is what you're already doing, getting as many views as possible across the world in different settings, especially where the services are limited, to get views of how the services are working, how people are managing the challenges in those different areas, running platforms, discussion platforms, sharing ideas with different speech therapists. And also because different parts of the world have different challenges, they have different priorities when it comes to communication disability. Hearing in one part that communication disability or communication is a human right in SA might not resonate well with another population in another part of the world. Let me give an example. Here in East Africa, when you come and tell people communication should be given funding, should be prioritized because it's a human right, when there's a lot of other challenges that people are really struggling with, that might not be the frontline message. You can come with if you want to promote communication disability and these services. So sharing ideas, hearing from different people across the whole, across the globe, can give an idea of what is the priority when it comes to communication disability and services in a specific population or region of the world.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think what you're pointing to is also the danger of very, very well-intentioned campaigns, but that you can completely misread the mood in certain areas, and that if one comes in championing something, when people go, look, you don't know the first thing about the general needs here. Some needs which we could argue are more acute than communication difficulty, you could completely mess up the message, I guess.
I think that's exactly what, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Because, you see, there's a lot of globalization of ideas, of awareness, of fights, of freedoms, but this still, it doesn't stop the localized needs of people. I believe communication disabilities is key, and services to for people with communication disabilities should be prioritized, but the approach needs to be customized or adapted to a population.
Having worked in a number of countries in East Africa, David made a final point that though training SLTs is vital, it's only the first step. Those services need to be affordable, accessible to the general population, and integrated into broader health services. A very big thank you to David for his time and insight into Kenya and East Africa more broadly, and a big thank you also to the International Communicator for allowing RCSLT to host this edition of the podcast. Keep well.